everyone. We are back for another episode of the Hauenstein Center's podcast series, Off the Stage. My name is Maddie Miller. I'm the media specialist for the Hauenstein Center. And today I am interviewing Stephen Smith, who is a Yale political science professor. Stephen, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Maddie. Glad to be here.
Awesome. And tell us where you're traveling from today.
I came from New York yesterday.
Yesterday. Okay.
Arrived yesterday afternoon.
Awesome. And did you see the thunderstorm yesterday?
I think I got in a little after the thunderstorm, thankfully. Yeah. It was a little bit, it was overcast, but I think the storm was earlier.
Yeah. Yes. I got stuck in that thunderstorm yesterday walking across the bridge.
Ouch.
That was, not a good time. So I'm glad you missed it. Awesome. Well, for those listening, Stephen is here for our Reflections on Patriotism event, which we are hosting tonight. And if you're listening to this podcast, the event has already happened, but you can go to the link in the description to listen to a recording of the event on YouTube or in podcast form. And I'm anticipating a great conversation, so you should definitely go check that out. Next up, we're going to do our bowl of questions, which I pointed out to you. Okay. So you can reach in there, grab a little piece of paper.
One.
Yep. From there, you can read it and tell us your answer to that question.
Okay. How do you think a hot dog is a sandwich?
This is a famous question in our office.
Definitely not.
Okay.
Definitely not.
And you have strong feelings.
I have to admit it's not a question I've ever heard before or ever thought of. But yes, I do have a strong feeling about it, that it's not. Why do I say that? Because a hot dog is eaten on a bun.
Okay.
And a sandwich is eaten on a slice or slices of bread.
Okay.
And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
We could argue, I'm sure.
Yes,
you know,
for
it's,
sure.
It's like saying, you know, is...
You know, like cereal, a soup, you know, kind of those things.
Or is that, I'm blanking on the name of the film with Bruce Willis. Is it a Christmas movie? You know,
they always talk about that. Die Hard?
Die Hard. Is Die Hard a Christmas? Yeah, we can argue about that forever. Yeah, okay.
No, those are the hard-hitting questions we like to ask. There is one more question
for
you. Yeah, if you want to pick that up.
Okay, let's look
We'll see what this one's about.
Okay, let's go with this one. If you would have any animal as a pet, which would you choose?
Ooh.
Well, that one is easy for me. I don't currently have a pet and actually haven't had one for quite some time. But I don't know how this will go down with your listeners, but I'm a cat person.
Okay.
I love the cat.
Yeah.
And I know the dog is by far the more popular American animal and so on. But I love the cat.
Yeah.
And if I were to have a pet today, it would be the cat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a cat, like a regular cat, or like, are you saying exotic cat? Like
No. The cats we've had were always just tabby cats. I wouldn't be an exotic cat person. The tabby cat is warm, it's affectionate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cats are weird, I get it.
Yeah.
I had cats
growing up, I love them.
Yeah, but I love the cat. I don't know why, but it's irrational.
I love it. Yeah, I had cats growing up, and I'm allergic to animals, so I can't really have pets. But I think if I was to have a pet, I would probably choose a cat over a
you
dog, too.
Okay.
Yes. So you're in good company.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, thank you
the
for answering.
The building we live in, we live in an apartment.
Apartment,
building.
Yeah.
It's full. I mean, of course, the cat owners, you never know. The cat stays in the house, but inside. But the building is full of people with dogs. There's just more dogs in it than.
And do they bark and
annoy
you?
No, not really.
Or no?
No. Okay. No. No. But I do see people often with
dogs.
Huge dogs. In
an apartment.
I'm talking about still in an apartment comp building, which is very, you know, I find hard for the, it would be hard to be the, think of the animal in that place. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
We might want to go on to other things.
We could talk about this all day. Awesome. Well, thank you for answering our bowl of questions. Now, this is where we'll start, like, the interview, which I always like to start at the same place, which is just hearing where did you grow up? What was your childhood like? What were you interested in? And how did that inform kind of your next steps, your college years?
Okay, gosh. I didn't know this was going to be a psychiatric session. I grew up in Chicago, not all that far from here, I guess. Yeah, I don't know how far it is exactly, but grew up on the, for any of your listeners who know the city, I grew up on the south side, south side of Chicago, and family was fairly a middle class family, I would say. We lived in the city. My parents were dad worked downtown in a factory. They had factories downtown. I don't think they do anymore. My mom was, for the most part, a stay-at-home mom, two children. And I wouldn't have said that my career and my intellectual interests and careers were so deeply connected. My family was not my parents were not college-educated people. They'd both been to college. Neither had graduated from college. They'd had some education, but they were not. They did not stress, education in the way that, for example, others might in the same way. They had other interests, of course, but I found sort of early on in life, books became very important to me, and reading became important. Sort of more than school. I was bored in school. I went to public school. I was bored, but books were both a source of learning as well as a source of escape for me. And I never thought I could make a life, a career built around books, but things sometimes happen in a weird way. You don't anticipate. I never would have believed as a child growing up. I wouldn't have even known what it meant. That I would be a professor later on. We didn't know professors. They were not part of our, my family's social circle. And yet, later, I would say, as I was in grad school and later, my family was very supportive of me, too. They kind of didn't know what I was doing, but they supported it. And I think later, I think we're pleased with my accomplishments in that world. Yeah. I don't know. There's obviously a lot more to say, but yeah. I'll leave it at that for the time being.
Cool. So then where did you go to college at?
I went to college at a small college in the South. It was the University of Chattanooga at the time. It's since become the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. It was a small college. I went there. Okay. Studied history. In fact, that's where I developed. I teach political science and political theory, as we call it, or political philosophy. It was where I first developed an interest and a taste for this. I had some wonderful teachers who I'm still in touch with. Many, many years later, I'm still in touch with, who focused on the history of political ideas. Okay. And I learned from them, it cultivated my interest and cultivated my interests that I pursued later on.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you kind of have built your life around reading books, mm-hmm. which is so cool. Do you have, I'm sure it's impossible to answer, but do you have a favorite book you've ever read? Mm-hmm. Or you could say,
yeah, I have many. Yes, your favorite is many. Probably the book that I go back to and have taught more times than any other book in my repertoire and is Plato's Republic.
Okay.
It, to me, is sort of the book that started it. Mm-hmm. When I say it, I mean the field that I work in. Yeah. And to me, nothing is greater than Plato. Okay. So, I mean, there are other great works, not just of philosophy, but of literature that I love. But since you're asking for one, I'm going to go with Plato's Republic.
I love that. That's
greatest
cool.
of all.
Mm-hmm. And you are a professor at Yale.
Correct.
Which is a very prestigious university. Do you, I don't even know how to ask this mm-hmm. question, but like, does it feel like you work at a really prestigious, well-known university, or do you sometimes forget that like it's a hard place to get into yeah. or things like that?
Some of both. Okay. I mean, in many, I've been at Yale now for 40 years. I don't want to date myself, but it's been a long time. And like many things, you know, like the fish, it's not aware that it's in water, and yeah. it's kind of a little bit the way you become inured to, you know, you take your environment for granted. But I never try to take it entirely for granted. I am aware it's an enormous privilege to be at this extraordinary place. And I'll tell you one story that sort of illustrates it. For a number of years, Yale College is divided into different residential colleges, which are central to the residential college experience. And for many years, I was what was then called master of one of the Yale residential colleges, Branford College. We no longer use that title. It's now head of college. But I was they didn't take it away. So I was a master of the college. And I remember every morning I would wake up. We lived in the college in a beautiful apartment. And I'd look outside in the gorgeous courtyard, the magnificent courtyard. And I think of the little courtyard I lived in the apartment where I grew up, you know, very, very modest. And I'd look at this and I would think to myself, how did I get here? Mm-hmm. You know, how did I get here? I couldn't believe my luck, my good fortune, just what it is. So I always try to retain a certain sense of awe at, you know, the place that yeah. where I am, because I realize it's a very special a very special place. For yeah. it's got good and bad, and it's not all great, but for yeah. the most part it's been an extraordinary experience for me, and I never try to take that simply for granted.
For sure. Do you think you'll be at Yale forever?
I hate to say anything's forever, but yes. I'm not going to move you know to another place at this point in life. So yeah, I think I'm a lifer.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
I've had a couple of opportunities mm-hmm. in the past, yeah. but you know, I've been a lifer, I think. Yeah,
I love that. Okay, that's awesome. So I was reading your bio mm-hmm. on the page, and I have to read this quote because I loved this. It said, "He is a diehard Yankees fan and hopes to be able to play for the team in the next life." So I also love baseball too, but I have to admit I'm a Cleveland Guardians fan.
Cleveland, okay.
Yeah, I grew up in Ohio, so that's kind of my MLB team. Okay. But I'm interested, what got you so interested in baseball? Have you always loved baseball?
Yes. Grew up, like I say, I grew up in Chicago on the south side, so I grew up as a White Sox fan. I grew up as a White Sox fan. My parents were both from the Bronx.
Okay.
And when I moved to the East Coast in my 30s, I sort of lost interest. Baseball is a little bit backsided for me. It's kind of lost interest. Hard to be a White Sox fan, you know. It's difficult.
Yes.
But when we moved to the East Coast, I sort of thought, and we were parents by that time. I wanted to reclaim. I thought, you know, my father had always been a Yankees fan, so I took up the Yankees.
Yep.
Now, mind you, I just don't want your listeners to think I was just jumping on the winners. The Yankees were in the doghouse at this time. They were not playing well.
I see.
In New York baseball, the Mets were. This was in the 80s. The Mets were the hot team.
Yeah.
And but I started going to games, which is not too far from. It's not that hard to get to from New Haven. Oh, and nice. As my son got older, we would go every year together. We got partial plan tickets, so we go, and it's just been an amazing added so much to my life. I live and die with the Yankees. And like I say, in the next life, maybe I'll take baseball more seriously in the next life. Yeah.
I love that. Okay, so if you do play for the Yankees in the next life, what position on the field would you want to play?
Oh, I'd go anywhere they would have me. But I think since this is utter fantasy, I'd love to be an infielder.
Okay.
Field those hot shots to the shortstop or third base. When I watch what the reactions of these guys, unbelievable.
It is so impressive.
And I'd love to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Of course, catching a fly ball right against the fence. I mean, what an experience that would be too. But yeah.
That's awesome. How many games do you get to a season?
We go to 10 or 12 games a year, I would say. Cool. Yeah, we have a plan.
Okay.
And, for 10 games, and we go to those. And if last year wasn't so good, but, you know, we usually try to go to one or even a couple of the postseason games if it shakes out.
If
it's going good, yeah.
I love that. My family gets together every year in August and goes to a Cleveland Guardians game. And it's just such a fun time watching them all season, but getting to go to a game is so fun.
I must say, I'm still not used to that term, Guardians.
I know.
It doesn't seem natural to me.
I know. Yeah. I've been trying because it's my team, and you know, but sometimes I still catch myself saying Cleveland Indians.
And the Jake.
Guardians, yes. Yes. Awesome. I love hearing stuff like that. Kind of going back to your career a little bit, I would just love to hear if you think about your career. Do you have one achievement that is maybe one of your proudest?
Yeah, that's a good question. The thing that in a way, I'll say two things. The thing I'm sort of proudest of in my career, and I alluded a little while ago to being the head of college, I think in many ways doing that, and I did it for 15 years, that was the proudest. I think that was my best achievement at Yale because it had to do with being involved in student life in a way that I never was, simply as a classroom instructor, seeing students where they live, working with them on a day, coming into contact with their successes and often with great difficulties, college, family, so on. You see the whole panoply of things, which are the human comedy, you know, I think for me the highlight of my career. The thing that maybe if listeners would be interested a little more in, I for many years I taught
please do.
I taught a very popular course called simply called Introduction to Political Philosophy. And it looked at the Western political tradition, largely from Plato to Tocqueville.
Yeah.
And from ancient Athens to, from ancient democracy to modern democracy. And that course was put online by Yale. There's something called Yale Courses Online. And your listeners can go to that, and you can, there's utter, completely free of charge. There's no charge. Wow. You can listen to all kinds of courses. Mm-hmm. But having my course online, Intro to Political Philosophy, Yale Course Online, I hear from people. And for many years now, I've heard from people from all over the world who've taken this course, as high school students, college students, retired people, who just interested in the material and who reach out to me, sometimes with questions, why you said something here, what did you mean, or just often, more usually, just to say, thank you for the course, I've loved taking it, and, you know, some different reasons, but I think that I'm also extremely proud of, because it's been able to reach so many people, and it's out there. You don't have to be a Yale student. Mm-hmm. You can just go. And for people who have never been to Yale, never set foot in Connecticut, maybe, or New Haven, you can get a little feel of what a college course is like, and I think that's kind of education for everybody. I think that's great. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. That is so cool to also just to mm-hmm. be able to hear from people all over mm-hmm. the world taking your course. That's really awesome.
I heard recently, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, from a letter I received, an email letter I received from a guy who introduces himself and says, I've been reading Plato, and it is your course, and he talks about this. And he says, I am now serving in my 8th year at a high security prison. And it was an extraordinary letter, the way in which how Plato is, you asked me why my favorite is from Plato. Plato has helped him to, you know, to live, to find a meaning and a value in life when, you know, living in this hellhole, obviously. But that was maybe the most amazing letter response I've ever received.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's really cool to hear. So one of the questions I've been asking on all of our podcasts this year is, so for the Hauenstein Center, our programming has had a theme throughout the academic mm-hmm. year, which has been empowered citizenship.
Okay.
You know, just thinking about how we can empower others to, you know, be better citizens of our country, our communities, and, you know, help make it a better place. So I'm curious for just to hear your perspective, like, how do you think the idea of empowered citizenship applies to the work you do or just how you live your life personally?
It's a great question. It's not like every good question. It's hard to answer.
For sure.
It's much harder to answer than what's my favorite book. how do we empower ourselves and how do we empower citizens? One thing I try to do, you know, it's not always easy, but I try, is to listen and to try to sympathetically engage with people I don't agree with. Mm-hmm. Try to see the world as they understand it.
Yeah.
This will sound like a cliche. It is a cliche, but I recently rewatched the film To Kill a Mockingbird. I hadn't actually seen it for quite a long time, but I sat and watched it from beginning to end, and I didn't forget how good it was. And, you know, the famous line when Atticus says, you don't really understand the world until you walk in somebody else's shoes. And I think there's, you know, there's a profundity to that statement. And I think being able to listen and to understand why people you disagree with think the way they do, not to demonize or, you know, assume the worst, but to try to figure out why they are the way they are, what makes them tick. I think, to me, that is a way of empowering ourselves, and in a way, it's connected to my book on patriotism too, because patriotism is not possible in a world of just kind of violent distrust and mistrust of our neighbors and, you know, associates. Mm-hmm. To try to understand them, maybe we won't, and maybe it's not always possible, but at least to try.
For sure. I love that perspective. Mm-hmm. I think, listening to each other and, mm-hmm. That's great. Awesome. My last question for you is how I end all of our podcasts, which is, what is some advice you would give to somebody wanting to go into a similar career path as yourself?
You have to have the passion for it. Mm-hmm. Being a university professor is many people ask, you know, they'll ask, how much do you teach? You know, I don't teach that much, you know, in terms of hours, in terms of like the way an elementary or a high school, I'm not in the, nearly as much, they don't understand it. It seems very easy. Mm-hmm. And yet it's a work that requires over a lifetime, great concentration. Most of the work that you do is done on your own. You have to be able to work on your own in a way. It's not for everybody. And it requires a passion for the subject. And I often told my students, when they're often undergrads asking about graduate school, you know, should I do that? And I said, say to them, if you can't imagine yourself really finding pleasure in doing something else, then you should do it.
Yeah.
Because it will require all of your capacities for concentration, for self-discipline, for, you know, focusing on something that at points will seem pointless, perhaps. But the life of being a teacher and a scholar is in many ways a difficult one. And if you have the passion for it, that's what I say, then do it. But if you don't, if you just think, oh, I'm kind of interested, then don't do it, because it will not work. Mm-hmm. So I think the passion and the commitment are central.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love hearing that. And I've had several professors from different universities throughout the country on this podcast, and they have all said very similar things.
Interesting. I love
hearing that. Thank you so much for your perspectives and sharing a little bit more about yourself today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for those questions.
Yeah, and we're excited to have you on our panel tonight.
And so. I'll have to remember that one about, is the hot dog a sandwich?
Yes, yes. You can pose that. We actually posed that to our student cohort, and that was like a topic they all had to debate, and some people had strong opinions, so... You'll have to pose that one to your students.
Well, if we have one more minute, I would mention one of the great culinary debates which I've ever been involved in.
Yes,
was fostered at the University of Chicago where I studied. Called, I don't know how many of your listeners know about this, have ever heard of these foods, but the latke hamantaschen debate.
Do you know what
a latke and a hamantaschen is?
Uh-uh.
A latke. My pleasure.
And for those of you listening, again, the link to the event that we're going to have tonight, Reflections on Patriotism, will be in the description. So make sure you check that out. And thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to Off the Stage Podcast, a series produced by the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. The Hauenstein Center, inspired by Ralph Hauenstein's life of leadership and service, is dedicated to raising a community of ethical, effective leaders for the 21st century. For more information on our center, our Cook Leadership Academy, or our Common Ground Initiative, visit our website at www.gvsu.edu/hc. To keep up with our current events and reoccurring initiatives, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn, all of which can be found linked below. If you liked this episode, consider giving us a review or rating so we can be found by other podcast listeners. Again, thanks for listening to Off the Stage Podcast.